The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is I Should Be Writing, episode 40 in season 17.
Well, I should be writing. I should be working on my craft. I should be writing. I should be submitting my next draft. But I'm sitting home watching Doctor.
Hello, everyone. Lord, what's happening with my hair? Okay, I'm your host, Merle Lafferty, and I'm wearing a hat because last podcast, Catwood redeemed the channel points for a hat, and I had no hats in here, so I'm wearing one now. It doesn't look good, but that's not the point. The point is Catwood spent points, and I am fulfilling them. So, if you're new, this is I Should Be Writing. It's a podcast for wannabe fiction writers. I'm your host, Merle Lafferty. I am been podcasting since 2004. I'm in the Podcaster Academy's Hall of Fame. I've gone from not having sold anything to being nominated for a Hugo Award for my novel Six Wakes and doing a Star Wars novelization. So I've been talking about this ever since I'd made zero money from my fiction. And things have gotten better in those times, so I'm still talking about it because there's still stuff to say. And also, not everybody wants to go back to the beginning, and if you are, I don't even understand you. I've had people say, hey, I'm at episode 100 now, and I don't know where your career's gone, but I'm enjoying your podcast. Okay, it's cool. It's that's what you get when you support the Patreon, is you can listen to everything since episode 1. I think I've lost a couple of episodes along the way, but pretty much that's what you get. So, I turned in my novel finally. I think I might have done that on Monday. Or did it on, I don't remember. It's in, it's done. And frankly, it took me a lot longer to recover from it than, I expected it to. And I gave it time. You know, I try to understand that when I get sick or when I get exhausted, I don't really have a lot of spoons to do anything, but I still think that I should, which turns into self-loathing. So, like, for most of this week, I've been thinking, I was going to take this week off and improve my stream. I was just going to say no writing, and that opens me up to do lots of other little things that I've wanted to do. And I haven't done any of it, and so I felt really bad. But finally, now, this morning I woke up feeling good and able to focus and stuff. So I even went for a run. That was pretty weird in the 90% humidity, but the temperature was low, so it was just like swimming through cool water, not warm water. But, yeah, so I haven't been doing any writing, but I've been thinking about writing a lot, and that's how I came up with today's episode title, because we're going to talk about bad writing. But first, we're going to talk about good news. My good news will continue to be I got the damn book in, and I'm proud of that. Nothing else really to report on my end, but if you have any news you would like to share, I have an email news, so y'all in the chat, if you got any good news, let me know. If you're new, I gotta say, rejections count as good news because if you get a rejection, that means you're a working writer. You just haven't sold anything yet. But people who don't get rejected usually aren't working because they're too afraid to submit anything. Or they're one of those unicorns who did sell their first story. That's like, there's like two or three of them out there. I don't know. Hey, I got signed out of Gmail, and I've got two-factor authentication, which means it takes me forever to get back in, because I'm secure, and it's a pain. I'm going to my phone. Haha, I got it. I knew I had one piece of good news. Good news. Here we go. Darren says, as of Thursday, May 27th, I am being poked for the second time so I can achieve full COVID vaccination. That is huge good news. I am so happy for everybody who's gotten their vaccination. We are getting closer to some semblance of a normal life. It's very good. I'm happy for you. And I hope your reactions were not bad, Darren. Also, finally figured out what my next writing project's going to be. I have a little over 3,000 words on it. As long as I can find an antagonist hiding in the shadow of vagueness, I have every hope of finishing it. Well, good luck in finding your antagonist out there. If not, your hero's going to have a really easy time with whatever they're working on, which, you know, is good for your hero and kind of bad for your readers. So that is the good news from the email. No one's saying anything in chat. If you think of something, or you ever get here later, go ahead and put it in the chat. I don't mind backing up and celebrating, because I got the yay button and I'm happy for it. Small aside, I've been trying to figure out something about myself. I backpedal into comfort consumption very frequently. I mean, I've talked enough about rereading Stephen King in this, for some reason, just this year, I'm talking about Stephen King a lot. I don't know why. It's not like I've done it any other year, but, you know, on one hand, I'm enjoying it. So pleasure is good. On another hand, you can learn. You can learn from somebody when, it's really hard to see your own weaknesses, but sometimes you can see other people's weaknesses and then, maybe apply that eye to your own work. But I'm always resistant lately to committing to a new book or a new TV show or something, and I don't know why. And I think I worry that ADD will attack and I'll abandon it, which is just sort of preemptive strike abandoning. Because I don't think I will get through it. And so I just go back to what's comfortable and I don't really have to pay 100% attention to. And I was thinking about that a lot this morning, and so I went into Audible and I deleted everything I had that was a reread and downloaded a whole bunch of stuff that I'd purchased and hadn't read yet. So we'll see how long that lasts. I am trying to read, still working on Lock Every Door by Riley Sager, I think. If I said that wrong, I'm sorry. But that's what I'm reading at night. I need to get back up to, need to reread Savage Legion, though, because Matt's next book just got a really good Publisher's Weekly review, and I'm so happy for him. If you don't know Matt Wallace, one of my best friends in the world, my co-host in my other podcast, Ditch Diggers, he's taking a little time off because he has the, you know, when writers talk about feast or famine, Matt's got the feast, and the feast can be really freaking stressful when you don't write. It's like, wow, I would love to have that problem. And when you do get that problem of like two different book deals and a day job and a whole lot of stuff that's due and then promotion of the other book, it gets to be a lot. So Matt's taking a break. But anyway, of course, I can't remember the title of Matt's new book. It's called Savage Something. So if you search for Savage Legion, Matt Wallace, you'll find Savage Legion, and then you'll probably be able to find the second one because the internet is full of things, just like Earth. Now, Nobilis, I'm finding I get more out of reading the best fiction than I do out of reading books about how to write. That's true. I was actually listening to a how to write romance book this morning on my run, and I thought, should I be listening to this while I run? And then I realized if I'd listened to it at home, I probably wouldn't be sitting down and taking notes anyway. And I feel like a lot of writing instruction comes from absorbing and not necessarily something you take notes on and have a test on. So, I think I got something out of it. The only problem is they're short and They're short and sweet and to the point chapters, which is great, but the author is in love with 80s music, and every chapter she says, like, the 80s music to go along with this chapter is, and then she lists three things, and the three songs and the three performers, and then with the short chapter, suddenly I'm listening to song titles again. So it's got a bad balance between song titles and actual content. But since I just sold it so well, I'll tell you what it was. Romancing the Beat by Gwen Hayes. I don't know if they have an ebook version, but there is a... I'm listening to the audiobook version. It's fairly short, but anyway, that's what I'm working on. Am I thinking of branching into romance? Abigail Hilton has done very well with that. I feel uncomfortable writing romance, and I want to do it better. And this book says, you know, you can either write a romance with this information, or you can write another book with a romantic subplot, which, you know, is what I do. But I would love to write one of those funny rom-coms. I love those. I'm not terribly fond of enemies to lovers because, you know, when you introduce somebody as a complete jerk, it's really hard to warm to them. Like I said last week, sorry, you can tell where, if you watch it, you can tell where it's going. The Heartrender and the guy from not Ferelden, but that's another fantasy place. You know, they're constantly bickering, and you know they're going to fall in love, but all I see is the bickering. I don't see any chemistry at all. Yeah, but you know what? It's Shadow and Bone has a TV show, and I don't, so who am I to judge? It is something I've wanted to be good at. I remember, you know how we always remember the bad things instead of the good things? I think it was Publishers Weekly or Kirkus. The thing they said about my first book was like, glowing review, the romance is weak. And that's what I remember, of course. That's what I remember. The romance was weak. And it is. I feel awkward writing romance, so I would like to learn more about it. So I enjoy reading it. I'm very happy. By the way, happy Pride Month. I'm very happy reading the queer romances that are becoming more and more mainstream right now. And, you know, they're not about the struggle of living a marginalized life. It's someone falling in love with someone else. And it's still a beautiful story. So I've enjoyed those. So I'm trying to learn by reading those, but also I do benefit from less vague instruction. And sometimes when you're reading something else, you're seeing the end result of a lesson, and sometimes it's good to learn the beginning of that lesson. I think that made sense. I don't know. But I do enjoy rewatching humor because I'm trying to still gonna work on an audio drama script that I wrote two episodes of and then it stalled. It's partly stalled because I got a bunch. I suddenly had three projects to work on for the first half of the year. So, you know, I'm legitimately needing to move away from it. But to be frank, it did stall. I didn't know where it was going. So, yeah, I want to get the humor beats from the Brett Forrester class I took and rewatching things like The Office, and listening to the Office Ladies podcast, which I'm enjoying a lot, and getting what I can out of that. So that's how rewatching can help you become a better storyteller. Although sometimes it shocks me how long it takes me to realize small fundamental aspects about people's personalities. Like after rewatching Friends a lot, Chandler cannot give good advice. And they hang a lantern on it way, way into like the eighth season or something. But in watching the early episodes, Chandler gives terrible advice. Always. It's not just Chandler's the funny guy. It's that if Chandler gives advice, it's going to go horribly wrong. And it took me a very long time to catch that little specific thing about his personality. But it's pretty consistent. I haven't watched Friends since they took it off Netflix. That's been a while now. But yeah, you can learn something by rereading or rewatching something, but I did want to address the fact that I am resistant to starting new stuff, and I've been trying to figure out why. And I think I'm just tired of ADD messing with things and me not finishing so I don't start in the first place. That's my theory. But I was going to talk about... Man, I've been going on for a while, sorry. I was going to talk about the case for bad writing. In this podcast, I say, you're allowed to suck. You're supposed to be bad starting out with. My favorite metaphor is running. Because when I decide I want to get in shape and run, I'm not going to go run a marathon. No one expects me to. You know, if I can run half a mile, I should be proud of myself. It's the same with writing. You're learning a new skill. So the first time you set out to start something that's awesome, it's probably not going to be awesome. It's a little different with art because you can like look at your body and know that your legs are not set up to run right now. They haven't been exercised. The muscles are weak. You've been sedentary, whatever. And so I think it was Ira Glass talking about how we get frustrated because we can see good art and we think we understand good art. So why can't we make the good art that's in our head? So that's a big divide when you get started. So it's like once you embrace the fact that you're allowed to write poorly and you just see it as this is another run. This is another morning run where I'm going to try to get a little bit faster than yesterday. That's what your writing is. You need to learn the various elements of beginning the story, continuing the conflict, ending the story, and you give yourself room to do that, and that will make you a lot happier. You don't have to show it to anybody, you don't have to workshop it, but if you keep writing and keep not thinking, oh God, this is tripe, just continue to write. And say, okay, well, yeah, that story was pretty much fanfic or pretty much a complete derivative of a popular movie right now, but, you know, it's my story and I wrote it. Then you will get better if you get over the fact and not waste your time thinking that you suck. Because all you're doing is, I like to see it as you're climbing a ladder, and the lower rungs are necessary. You can't get to the top until you step on the lower rungs. So every time I write something that doesn't quite work, I just try to remind myself that that was practice and I probably learned something. It's hard to tell because, like I said, I sort of soak in the whole writing lesson thing. I can't tell you one thing I learned specifically from my MFA course, just that I got a lot out of it. But this morning I was thinking further that when we get to a plateau type situation, you know, when you start selling, or at least I'll just talk about me. I don't know about you. When I got to a point where I was selling, the importance of writing something that my agent liked and that she could sell was the most important thing to me. And so I stopped experimenting. I stopped playing. I stopped just throwing stuff at the wall to see what would stick. And I think I did myself a disservice there, which is another reason why I've been looking so forward to finishing these two big projects, because I wanted time to play. And in this play, I want to allow myself to be bad, because when you stop fretting about all that and you just allow yourself to do whatever, write it poorly, throw in a new character. You may come up with a pile of drivel, but you might come up with a pile of drivel with an interesting character that you wouldn't have thought of otherwise. And you can still get something out of writing the terrible ideas in your head, because an idea comes to your head and you think, huh, should I write that or not? Should I write it down for the future or not? Why not? I'm also, I fell back on this, but I'm reading the, I'm gonna find it, How to Write Funny by Scott Dickers. He was one of the co-founders of The Onion, and he talks a lot about humor and a lot about how people just come up with stuff. And a lot of it is you think up something mildly amusing and you write it down. And you do that every single time you think up something mildly amusing or funnier. And that can help you sort of flex that muscle. Because whoever says, you know, people are naturally funny, you either got it or you don't, it's just like saying, okay, sure, Michael Phelps is built to be a natural swimmer. But there are plenty of people who are good swimmers who do not have his body shape. And there are plenty of people who write funny things that were not the class clowns or don't do stand-up or something. And those are people who work on things. So I'm trying to learn from that, as well as the Brett Forrester course I took, how to be funny. And so I'm trying to remember, which I don't always do, but trying to remember to write down the funny ideas I get, even if they're mildly amusing, because that will help me find the ones that might actually be good. Kids Are Asleep says that I'm a professional. I must now only write things that will sell. Brain Trap is so real. Thank you. I really appreciate you saying that, because it's, if you weren't here for the Ursula Vernon interview, one thing that makes me sort of jealous of her, honestly, jealous of her, is the fact that she publishes her own stuff as well as two publishers. And, you know, she just pretty much writes everything in her head. Maybe not everything, because she sort of is an idea factory, so there's probably something waiting in the wings. But I want her confidence, or just ability to write whatever, and it doesn't matter who's waiting for it, or if anybody is waiting for it. Tasha says, I made it to another birthday. I guess that's good news, right? Yes, it is good news. Happy birthday, Tasha. You get the yay button. Does the yay button work? The yay button's not working. Oh, crap. Oh. I was playing with overlays, and I moved the yay button. I feel terrible. I'm sorry, Tasha. Where did it go? I'm mad. I'm mad now. Dang it. We'll get it. We'll get it. We'll find it. Yes! I did it! Yay! Okay, happy birthday, Tasha. Sorry, that was very awkward and had some dead air. So, Tasha made it to another year. Congratulations. Nick Logos tuned in because trying to finish an outline for my dream project visual novel thing. Your vibe is soothing. Thank you. That's really cool. Yes, welcome, and if you have any questions, ask them at any time, and I've got plenty of VODs on Twitch, and this will also be cut down a little bit, removing the interaction, most of the interactions with chat, just to be a one solid episode, and that you can find that at merverse.com if you want to listen to any back episodes. But welcome, I hope your visual novel thing works well. Tree Lobsters, I'm champing at the bit to write my next thing. I don't want to start on something that won't sell, so I wrote down 21 ideas and tossed them over the wall to my agent to have to see what he comes back with. Yeah, honestly, when Orbit told me they didn't want any more Shambly Guides books, but, you know, they want to hear me pitch other books, I wrote down 3 ideas. Six Wakes was my least favorite idea. That's the one they bought. I panicked. I'd never written a mystery before, so I started researching mysteries hardcore, and then I wrote Six Wakes, and then it did very well and got a lot of award nominations. So, you know, sometimes even you don't know what the good ones are going to be, and that's why it's good to have somebody there to help out. Granted, if you are a Patreon or a Twitch supporter, there's a place in our Discord called Accountability Buddies where just people check in on what they're working on and when. And so if you need somebody, I can't promise anybody will look at your stuff, but if you just want to add a boy, add a girl, add a folks to keep you going, that's a good place for it. Hey, Litrapod. Sorry, I'm saying it wrong, I'm sure. What books would you recommend for aspiring mystery writer? What I did was I read the greats. I just started with Agatha Christie and I just kept going. I tried Dorothy Sayers. She's too dry for me. I can't stick with it. Somebody asked me this last time, and I did not look it up. I put it on my whiteboard, and I didn't look it up. I can't remember what other books I found. I am going to have to look those up. I'm sorry, but if you do research on Agatha Christie and the writers of that time, they kind of got together and wrote the rules for writing proper mysteries, like what murder mysteries had to be and what they couldn't be. Agatha Christie then turned around and broke all the rules because that's who she was, and she did it brilliantly. So, but that's just to show she knew all the rules, so she knew how to break them. This might be a little bit of spoilers, but if you want to know which stories break the rules, that would be The Murder of Roger Ackroyd, Curtain, and Then There Were None. Those are the 3 that come to mind as breaking the rules of mysteries, and they're brilliant. Oh, probably Murder on the Orient Express, too, I'd say. So, finding out what that group did and the rules that they set up, things like that I hadn't taken into account, like, but it sounds obvious when you say it out loud, which is like the detective, whether it's a real detective or, you know, somebody who works in a cupcake shop, they have to solve it. Like, they can't be the primary investigator and then have someone else figure it out. They have to solve it. They can't be the murderer. The murderer needs to be on the same level, probably a little bit smarter or a little bit dumber, but not a complete idiot. That was my problem with now I can't think of it. The Fifth Element. I remember enjoying that movie, but the main antagonist was such a loser and was so easily defeated that it's like, where's the excitement? I know I'm talking about a very old science fiction movie, but that one stands out as did not choose an appropriate antagonist. And that wasn't even a mystery, but I think that the antagonist sort of mirroring the protagonist on a lot of things is a pretty standard writing advice. Death on the Nile to Christie's rule-breaking list. I'm trying to think which rule. Yes, I'm sorry. I need to say that whenever I endorse Agatha Christie. There's a lot of racism and classism and sexism, which is... it hurts me when women write sexist stories. I just don't understand it. But anyway. But if you want to learn how to put a mystery together, and how to introduce red herrings and how to distract people. Her stuff's amazing. There's a reason why I think she's like the best-selling novelist in the world of all time. But yes, if racism, classism, you know, just be aware that it's in Agatha Christie. So I'm going to tie it up and just say, allow yourself to write poorly, and that goes for everybody, not just beginners. Because if you feel stagnant, you're probably not letting your imagination play enough. So just let it happen. I'm going to be letting it happen. I might even do a couple of writing streams. I don't know how much. I don't know how much I'm comfortable with. Like, if you just hang out with me writing, or if you see what I write. But I'm going to try to be doing something to force myself to write poorly and write whatever's in my head. So if you support the Patreon, you can get this entire episode completely unedited, including all my interactions with chat. And if you like the tighter episode that my awesome producer Summer does, then check it out at merverse.com. Or you can join us live for free Tuesdays and Thursdays, 3 p.m. and 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time, respectively. But to find out more about me, you can email mightymer@gmail.com or go to merverse.com to see all the work I do. On Twitch and Twitter, I'm Mighty Mer, and I hope to see you next time. And until then, you should be writing. Remember, you can support the show at patreon.com/mightymer. I Should Be Writing theme music provided by John Anilio. You can find more about him at johnanilio.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license. But I should be writing.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.